especially as a person of color, or you simply want to hear the inspirational story of how a fellow girl on Limited is following her passion to see people of color feel confident in their own skin, then you'll love listening to my guest in today's episode. Yinka Akindeko, widely referred to as Dr. Yinka Skin, is an aesthetic doctor and a general practitioner, as well as the founder of the DYS Skin range, which is an anti-aging skincare line for people of color. She founded DYS as a response to the need of her patients to improve the appearance of lines and wrinkles on their skin, but with non-invasive techniques. Yinka's interest in anti-aging began when she noticed while working in her busy North London clinic that her anti-aging treatments did more than simply improve the appearance of lines and wrinkles on her clients' faces. She noticed it also had a remarkable effect on their confidence and mood. The DYS range was the fallout of her wildly successful Facebook Live broadcast, where she shared her knowledge on skincare as well as answered audience questions. I absolutely loved delving into her world one story at a time and learning about her turbulent childhood, the start of the DYS brand, how she combines running a business with a medical career, and what really, really motivates her. I'm confident you will love this episode. My sincere apologies for the faint echo or feedback you'll hear at certain points in the interview. Gosh, if only tech played predictable ball all the time. But I'm confident these little bleeps won't ruin your listening pleasure. Lastly, I know some of you are probably wondering why I didn't do a solo episode this week. Well, the plan is to have two back-to-back interview episodes, and there's a very good reason for that, actually. In the spirit of Christmas, good tidings, and especially gift sharing, I thought, wouldn't it be great to share the stories of those guests of mine who have product businesses? And this is in the hope that you kind people will show them some love through your patronage, because your patronage will not only bless them, but it will be a blessing to those people you'll be sharing their gifts with. So that being said, let's get into the interview. My name is Tiari, and you're listening to the Girl Unlimited podcast. Yinka, it gives me so much pleasure to finally welcome you to the Girl Unlimited podcast, because I know for a fact that you are a girl daring to tap into your unlimited potential, and you do it with so much grace. So guys, Yinka and I go way, way back to our young teens. I don't really remember much from that time, but we reconnected again a few years ago, and I came to know this medical doctor with flawless skin and a relatively young family and a young business. And I was just taken by the Dr. Yinka Skin brand. So welcome to the show, Yinka.
Thank you so much, T. This is such a pleasure and an honor. So thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. So for our first question, I like to go way back because I want our listeners to kind of have a feel of, you know, so right now we're looking at the beautiful brand, you know, so we can hear, okay, we can't see, but we can hear the beautiful brand that is DYS and Dr. Yinka Skin. But if we went back and like, okay, so what was it like for you in childhood, and what was it like growing up, and was there any indication that you will be, you know, you will be where you are today?
I hope you've got your tissues. And
oh my goodness, because I have a vulnerable time, so hit me with it. I'm fine.
So I didn't have a happy childhood. which sometimes comes as a surprise to people that know me now. I didn't have a happy childhood. I was born out of wedlock. In those days, it was a big deal.
It was a big deal, yeah.
The bastard child. Yeah. Wow. My parents were not married. My mom fell pregnant. And due to circumstances, I'll tell you the story. So she, I'll share it. It's my story. I don't know if she wants me to share it, but it's my story. And I think it's important for people to know this story.
Absolutely.
She wanted to have a termination. So she went to this doctor to have a termination. And while she was at the doctor's, it was so painful that she was thrashing around and she fell. So wow. When she fell off the examination couch, mm-hmm. she had this big gash. They were going to continue, but she had this big gash and they couldn't stop it from bleeding. So the doctor said, go away, sort that stuff out and then come back for your procedure. And then she went away and she thought to herself, this doesn't, there must be something happening here. So I'll keep this child.
Oh, wow.
And following that, I was a very sickly child. She used to say I was a very sickly child. And my mom worked in a bank. So they used to send her to different places. So I grew up with my grandmom. When I say I don't have a happy childhood, it's a bit of a lie because my grandmom, she's still alive. She's the most loving human being on the planet. Like people would say to her, we can pick maggots off your children. Like it's a Yoruba saying. Because she would love with all her heart. She had no reservations about loving. She had no halfway sign about love. Like, wow. And she, when I don't know how to love, I would say to myself, what would Mama Inka do? Because that's what they would call her. I was her baby. So she was looking after me. So she was called Mama Inka. What would Mama Inka do? She would probably just not eat and drink till she saw the person she loved. And she's done that all the time. She does that for my babies as well.
Wow.
So that was formative for myself. I was saying I was a very sickly child. And at one point, my mom said she was so scared that I was going to die. Mm-hmm. So she spoke to a woman, like a wise woman in her community, who said, oh, she won't die. She won't die. Don't worry. She'll be great. Don't worry about her. She won't die. She'll do great. You know, and she said that sort of gave her peace all the time. You know, every time when I was sick, she would say, oh, that mama said she won't die. She'll be a great child. And that was some of the early, you know, at some point I moved in to be with my dad, to live with him. And that was many years of pain. So when you met wow. me, I was living through with my dad, you know, and wow. it was a very, very difficult childhood, to put it mildly, you know. And that was my childhood. It was a painful one.
So what made, it sounds to me like there were two, you had two phases in your childhood. So thankfully you had Mama Inka, your grandmom, who was, you know, an epitome of love, and she showed you what love was. And every time I hear stories like that, I'm always like, I'm so grateful that such moments happen, even if it's sometimes just a moment in time. So you had that, and then you obviously switched, and then that's the bit you started when you said, I didn't have a happy childhood. So I'm guessing, you know, the other bit, obviously because of all the hardship, that's just kind of stuck in your head more. And probably as you've grown older, you know, Mama Inka's love and the love she showered on you has now like risen to the surface, and now you are able to assess both of them. So I want to know a little bit about what it was like with your dad then. So when you say it was hard, if you don't mind sharing, that is, what exactly made it hard? And like you said, that was the moment our paths crossed the first time. So what made it hard?
So I lived with, growing up, I lived in both worlds, right? So culturally, the child belongs to the dad. So even if you lived with your mom, every so often, your father's people will come and say, you're a child, you need to know us. So they whisk me away to live with my paternal grandmom, who, thinking about it now, lost a lot of her children in childhood. So she probably was a broken woman herself and didn't find it easy to love, but she would, She was a responsive, maybe she was an acts of service kind of person. She would do what she needed to do, but she wouldn't cuddle you like Mama Inka, you know, stroke your ear, pick out something from your nose, give you something she was chewing in her mouth. So I would flip back and forth until I was 9 years old and my dad came and just out of the blue said he was taking me with him. And Mama Inka begged. I remember that conversation. She begged and they said, no, she belongs to me. She's my child.
How did that make you feel?
That till today is the worst day of my life.
Wow.
I remember that journey. I say that I remember trees along that journey. Like if you took me back. Now, this is a really long journey. This is like an 8 to 10 hour journey because we're going from Akure to Port Harcourt. So it's a long journey. So we're going
just for Nigeria. I'm just going to pause just for a second, just for our listeners who are listening and you don't know what the area she's talking about, because I know we're not always going to have people from that part of Africa listening. So just to put things in context, Akure is a town, Akure and Port Harcourt are towns in a country called Nigeria, which if you haven't been able to tell yet, that's where I come from. And that's obviously where Yinka comes from. So obviously our paths crossed in Port Harcourt. And it's funny because I actually schooled a bit in Akure. So weird. Well, yeah, go on.
So your journey was the other way.
The other way around. Yeah.
So I went from, so it was like a 10 hour journey, maybe 8 to 10 hour journey. I can't remember how long. I was 9 years old. But I remember bits of the journey, like I would see a tree and I would wish this tree would do something so that I would have to turn back and go back to what I knew. But when I got to my dad's, I realized that I was taken because my dad had been married for many years and he didn't have a child. And my dad was, he's passed on now, was a very wealthy man. He was very well known in the community. So he had this big house on the his street and there was no child. And it was a big thing culturally.
Interesting. Yeah.
So I was brought in to be that plug for them. So I wasn't brought in because they wanted to love me or they just needed a child in the house. And my dad was not a loving man to anyone. So I wouldn't say he was horrible to me as a person. He just wasn't a kind, nice man anyway. So that's what I grew up with. I grew up with a harshness in an environment that I really wasn't wanted. I was just here to fill a hole in the house, you know, and that was it essentially.
Wow. Okay. So obviously he was married for many years. So did you have to live with your stepmom? Because that would be something else entirely, isn't it?
I did have to live with my stepmom, who did her best as she could initially, because when you don't have a child, I think there's a perception that you're going to be wicked to your stepchild. And I think she tried as much as she could to be kind. But the cracks showed up really quickly because there was no background to her wanting me anyway. So the cracks showed up and I was just left adrift. Yes. So
and during this time, what was your relationship like with your mom? So I know you said you grew up with Mama Inka. So where was your mom in all, you know, in this scene, this picture?
So my mom, like I said, she moved around a lot. She with her job. So she would call. We had a phone at home. We, like I said, in those days, not everyone had a phone, but we did have a phone and she would call. I can't say how often, maybe once a week, maybe once a month. I have no recollection, but she would call and we would say hello. I know I didn't see her for about 3 years or 4 years. I'm trying to remember. I didn't see her for many years after I left.
What was that like for you? Did that?
So I'll tell you a story. There was a time that I was a precocious child. I was very clever very early on. I read voraciously. And one time I wrote a letter to my mom. I must have been 11 or so. And it was, you know, dear mom, this is the worst thing in my life. This is so horrible. Please save me. And I, you know, detailed what breakfast, lunch, dinner, what I did, how I did that, you know. And then for whatever reason, I left you on the dining table.
Oh, no. Oh, dear. Okay. So I would love to hear the conclusion of the story.
And I think it was my dad or my stepmom that found it. I'm not sure who found it. It would probably be my stepmom that found it and gave it to my dad. Oh, my God, the fallout. Oh, you say you're suffering, right? You say you're suffering. And it was a massive issue for weeks, you know, for
that must
a
have been
long
hard for
time.
An 11-year-old, did you say?
Yes, I must have been around 11. I'm trying to remember if maybe even 10, maybe not even primary school, because I was still in primary school when I got to Port Harcourt. Wow. So it wasn't nice, that experience. So I missed that a lot. I felt like I had no advocate. So if, you know, when your child does something wrong and daddy's being harsh, you're like, well, maybe he didn't mean it like that. Okay, so come here, come and sit down. You know, take him away from that. Or when you're harsh with him and you come back and say, okay, come and take ice cream. Those were never things. Things were never extended to me, you know. Like that, yeah.
You know, interestingly, I was telling my last guest, I was like, for children, because she as well had a difficult childhood, and I was like, the greatest need for a child, as far as that's my opinion, is security. They want to feel safe. They want to, inside that, you know, cocoon of safety is protection, it's love, it's expressed love. Not just love in the heart, because I'm sure your dad in some way, shape or form may have loved you. And especially as, you know, I don't know if you guys went or if he went on to have any more children, but I'm sure at that time, you being the only child he had, I'm sure at in somewhere, some recess in his mind, he must have really loved you, but just didn't know how to train. And sadly, I think that's the case for so many men of that generation, unfortunately. They just miss out on the experience of what it's like to be a true parent to a child. And it's one of the things I'm so grateful for, that we have obviously learned from those experiences and have become the sort of people that we are, hopefully not as broken
as,
you know, or as dysfunctional as, you know, our upbringing were. So I'm so glad that you told me that story, because yeah, it gives me I guess it paints a different image, sort of, that I had of you. So where in this time, so did you ever, because you said you read, you know, voraciously and stuff, all through this time, was there ever any time you thought, okay, you know what, when I grow older, I'm going to be a medical doctor, or I'm going to own my own business? Or was there anything like that during this time, or you were just focused on just getting through that period of your life?
I think I've always wanted to be something. So I've always wanted to be independent. I've always felt that you lose your dignity when you're not independent. So it's still a big deal for me now that no matter what you do, be independent. Don't have to rely so much on people, because they will, you know, they'll treat you like trash. That was like my take home lesson from my childhood. If you're dependent on people, you lose your dignity. So, and that was important to me, to have some dignity. So I wanted to be something, but I didn't know what I wanted to be. I just knew that whatever I decided to be, I was going to try and excel in it. I wanted to be an aeronautic engineer.
Is it?
Yep.
Oh my goodness.
Because I felt then in those days, you know, you didn't have Google, but I couldn't find any female Nigerian aeronautics engineer. There was only like one university offering it. So I wanted to make a mark and be different and be, you know, and that's what I wanted to do. And then I moved from that to something like, oh, because there was only one university and there was something with admission. So I said, okay, I wanted to be an electrical engineer, because I was really good with putting things together. I enjoy, you know, this kind of electronics kind of thing. In fact, funny enough, I have an O level in electronics engineering, like I did a YX.
That is really interesting. So I it sounds to me like greatness was, you were attracted to greatness, something that makes you stand out. I wonder why that was. Was there anything in your childhood that probably led to this? Did you feel like you were not seen? Was that?
I think so. I think that was it. I think I felt not seen. Mm. I felt disrespected. I felt without dignity. I wanted to have dignity. I wanted to be able to stand on myself. Like I say to my boys, you know, everything I do is for you to have, you know, to be independent, to stand on your own, so that if you don't have someone, you can still be, you know, you can still have some dignity. It's like dignity is a big word.
That is your word. Your word is dignity.
You know, so that was it. Then what happened was, my dad wanted me to study medicine. You know, as you know, it's quite a big thing, you know, culturally. I want you to be a doctor. I want you to be a doctor. I said I didn't want to be a doctor. So I remember applying to university, and I put engineering, and you know, and he tore my admissions form and said, no, you must study medicine. And that's how I came to study medicine. And the story is that I got into medical school very angry, because this was not what I wanted to study. This man made me do it again. I have no independence. I have no dignity. These people,
I don't have a voice.
So I got into medical school. I got into University of Ibadan. Like, this is like the top medical school in the country. And the first year, I was completely faffing around, like just getting like bare minimum in my exams. And one day, I've told this story a few times, but I was standing in front of a results board. So they would post our results on the board. I can't remember if it was our name or matriculation number. I can't remember. Yeah, so standing on the board looking at results, and it was like a physics exam. I can't remember now, but it was an exam that many people were expected to fail. So I got there, and I had got like the bare minimum as well, or 51 or something, you know. And I turned to this guy who was next to me, who I knew was, so in our first year in university, all the science courses, lots of science courses, science degrees were together. So you would get zoology with veterinary medicine, with dentistry, with physiotherapy, with pharmacy. So you didn't really know what people were studying. But sometimes you got a vibe, you know, that, oh, this person's told me study medicine. So there was this boy in our class who was like the most unserious character in the world. He would dress up, he would wear funky ties. He would, you know, he was like a joke to everyone. He was standing by my side. So I checked my result and I turned to him and I said, what did you get? He said something like 67 or 70. I was like, what? What? You, that you're so unserious. How come you got that? And he said, what do you mean? Like, he couldn't understand. I said, oh, you're not serious. He said, what do you mean I'm not serious? This is medicine. This is my dream. I've worked hard to be here. Like, all of us work hard to be here. This is like something that was given to us. And I stood there and thought, oh my goodness, I've got this. People have worked hard all their lives to get here, and I'm here being stupid. And that changed it for me. That was the day I decided, no, I'm going to take this seriously. This is not about my dad. This is about me excelling in what I do. And that changed it for me.
Yeah, I hear you. So you probably didn't rate medicine as something worth rating. I mean, nothing compared to an aeronautic engineer, for instance. You didn't see them in the same category. And probably because it was so easy for you to get in, and you got into the best university in that for medicine in Nigeria at the time, you probably didn't take it that seriously until you saw how difficult. And I can relate, because it was kind of the same thing with me with law. I got into University of Jos at the time, and it was the same. It was so easy for me to get in. I didn't have to do JAMB, because you hear a lot of stories of people who having to take the exams over and over again, and it's their dream, and when they get in, you know. But it was so easy for me. And I remember the first year as well, taking a lot of things for granted. And, you know, eventually, like, especially when I realized that they're actually, because I remember some people who we came, who I did 100 levels with, some of them, that's first year in university, for those of you who don't know what 100 level is, the first year in university. And we, some people were actually taken out of the course because they came in some different way. And and it was at that point I realized, okay, this is actually a privilege. Use it.
Yes.
Use it. So, yeah, so please go on. So what happened after that? So you got into, you eventually got serious, and then, you know, you attacked medical school like you should have.
I attacked medical school. That is an understatement. Is understatement, because I remember it was the time I said this and people were like, you're lying. I was studying for 20 hours a day. I had it mapped out to a science. I had 2 hours twice a day that I was sleeping. I'll tell you another funny story. So I had this roommate who was also a medical student, and the others in the room were not medical students. So me and this roommate would go to study. We had our own kind of reading room and everything. And there was a time I was studying this 20 hours a day for many days. I'm not saying I'll study 20 hours straight, but I was in the reading room, you know, doing those kind of things. You know, I might get up and talk with my friends, but in the study mode, I was in that mode for 20 hours a day because I'd set myself that target.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. I attacked medical school. So there was then I became unwell. I became really sick.
Obviously, because that's a lot.
This friend took me everywhere. You know, she took me to the staff, to the university health clinic. And they did all these tests and they really couldn't find anything. You know, they would do malaria tests, blah, blah, blah. They couldn't, they examined me. There was nothing, but I was just so lethargic. And I would sleep for hours. And she was so worried about me. And she just kept, you know, she's still my friend. Amazing, amazing woman. And that's another thing. I've always been blessed with friends. Like, I've always had amazing friends. So she kept, you know, she would come, she would touch me, she would do this, she would hold my hand, we'll go there. Then she stopped and said, Yinka, when was the last time you ate? I said, oh, I think I must have. She said, Yinka, we live together. We go to the reading room together. I go off to Mama Nat. We had Mama Nat. It's the cook. You say you don't like eating amala for breakfast. I go at lunchtime, I go to this thing. We worked it out that I probably had not eaten in days. Oh my goodness. It was the most comical. She said, get up. I'm like, I'm weak.
Well, let me get this straight. So the person, the nurse or whoever you guys went to see, didn't realize, they didn't deduce, well, you are the medical doctor, so maybe they it's not something.
How would they know?
How would they ask questions?
I didn't remember. I hadn't eaten in days. Only way I knew, even till now, I still can't believe that I didn't do it because I have no recollection of not eating. And she took me, she said, come with me. I said, I'm weak. She said, no, I'm not holding you. Walk. So we walked downstairs and then we got to the canteen. She said, rice with dodo and some beans and meat and give her full fat coke. Sit down there. And she whinged at me the whole time. You've just been reading stupid books. You won't eat your food. Tomorrow we're eating amala for breakfast.
Oh my goodness.
And you know, that was how much I attacked medical school. By the time when I started medical school, I wasn't one of the clever ones, you know, but then I applied myself, put my heart into it, and I did quite well. By the time I finished medical school, I was, there was something called the provost list, which was like the top medical student. So I got on that list.
Well, thank goodness, because I would have asked you, because my next question was going to be, did it pay off? Please tell me it paid off. So obviously.
It did pay off. Because the University of Biomedical School was not easy. You know, there were 1,000 people that got into medical school, about 1,000 people, so maybe 900 and something in my first year. In the final year when I left, on that board, there were like 156 names on that board.
Wow. Yes. So that's about 10%.
Yes. So many people would have dropped to the next class, dropped out, had a receipt. And thankfully for me, you know, I was able to go through medical school with no receipts. No, I didn't have to do any exams twice. I just, you know,
sort of
like I sailed through, but I went through, you know, so that was good.
That's amazing. I read this book called The Dip by Seth Godin. I don't know if you've seen it before. It's a little book. And he actually gives an illustration of when he's trying to explain what the dip is. He gives this illustration with actual medical school, I think, where he's talking about a specific very, very difficult subject, which all the students have to go through. And if they don't pass that subject, they basically fall away. And he used that to illustrate that the dip is that area where, you know, where the wheat and the chaff are separated. that's what medical school does to you. It's so stringent and so intense so that it weeds out all the faffers, mm-hmm. the unserious ones, the people who it's not really a dream for them, or people who are not willing to like put on their big panties on like you had to at some point and then attack it. But I mean, I'm glad it paid off for you. And but I guess my next question then is, because I've always known you as this really cool chick, right? I mean, you are very social, we've been in social settings together and you are hilarious. You have an amazing sense of humor. And I've always wondered, because I've always seen medical doctors as nerdy. It's a bit nerdy. So what's the secret, I guess, in your case? How did you combine both the cool factor and, do you see what I'm saying? The cool factor and the nerdy factor.
So there are two things there, right? I'm not cool. I don't know if I'm cool. I wouldn't say I'm cool, but I like people. So I like people. So even from childhood, I realized that people have always been good to me. So God wants me to be good to people. I'm not always good at it, but it's something that is a driving force in my life. So that people have always been good to me, people that you've never expected, you know, and it's always been like that. Like I would go somewhere, I remember, okay, so we moved to Canada a couple of years ago, it's not been 2 years yet. And one of the stories was, I went to visit a friend who had already moved to Canada. That was, I went to visit a friend. Her husband had never, I didn't know him from way back. I just knew this is my friend's husband. And we were talking about accommodation. I needed to move something. I needed to change. I needed to move somewhere. And then he said, Yinka, come, let me show you. This is someone like literally maybe I'd seen him 8 hours in my life. And the 8 hours was part of this second conversation we were having. My friend, I've known her for years. She didn't say anything. No, is this her husband? He says, Yinka, come, let me show you. So I said, okay. So we went to the basement and he showed me, oh, see this room? It's a nice room. It's got a closet. It's got a toilet here. It's got this here, blah, blah, blah. I said, it's really nice. Your home is beautiful, blah, blah, blah. So he says, okay, come, let's go. So we went back upstairs and he says, if you like it, stay there. Don't pay anyone. Stay there till you have the place you want to go to. I was so shocked. I said, don't be asking me questions like that without asking your wife. He said, oh, okay, my wife, what do you think? She was like, I can't say no to you, you know? And this is someone I'd never met, but he just went out of his way to help me. He didn't even ask his wife, you know? And so it's always been that way that I felt like, even if I can't give you money, I can give you a smile, I can listen to your story, I can hype you, I can tell someone about you, because people have done the same for me. So that's one part of the story. The second part of the story is that at a stage in my life, I was a very angry human. And I remember someone saying, I've never seen you smile. I've never seen you smile. Why are you always angry? Why are you always sad?
Around what time was this specifically?
This was my early, this was my primary school to secondary school, you know, that I would say
that's
from
when you were with daddy and stuff.
So I would say from age 9 to 13 or 14, something like that. Right. I was a very unhappy child. Mm. And then I developed a doorknob. What did I call it? The doorknob test. I called it the doorknob something, where immediately I touch the doorknob to my house, that's where I leave the problems. You go out there and be amazing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I remember teaching it to someone. They're like, oh, isn't that a miserable life? I said, well, it's miserable inside and outside. But if you can touch the door and realize I can be happy, I can decide to be happy, you know? And that was it for me. So those are sort of the two reason. So I'm not cool. I just like people. And then people like me back. And I like people of different. So when I was in university, it was a big joke with my roommate. Where do you know this one from? I said, hey, you don't know this thing. She's the girl that something, something. Like, hey, but me and you went there. Like, but she was gisting us about, you know, I like people of all backgrounds. So I have Indian friends, Sri Lankan friends, you know, Georgian friends, and rich friends, poor friends. I just feel humans are interesting. So I think it's that interest in humanity and humans that makes it look like I'm cool. I'm not really cool.
me looking at you from the outside, okay? So I think it's that fascination that probably comes through. So your fascination, like you said, for humanity. So I think that fascination comes through, and you are very down to earth and very, I use the word sociable. So like I said, we've been together in a few social settings. And if I'm 100% honest with you, I've sometimes felt very uncomfortable. Not because of anyone in the setting, it's just because of my person, because it takes me a while to, you know, so that's just who I am. It takes me a while to learn the room. I'm friendly and I smile and everything, but you exude this aura that kind of draws people to you. And obviously, like I said, it's probably because you like people as well. So I'm fascinated with human beings. I don't know if I like people.
I'll tell you. So one of our social events that we went out, that you were there in someone's house, it was, you came in, I'm not sure what happened that day, but you came in a bit on edge. I could feel it. You were on edge. You were not comfortable. You're very charming. You have this big smile. You know, you're very interesting. I always like talking to you. But that day you sat in the chair and wanted to disappear. And I felt that. And I think my years of human, I felt that I'd be looking at humans. So we started talking about your hair. Remember?
Yes. Yes, I remember.
And I said, oh, tell me about your hair. I've always liked your hair, you know. And that was it. You just bloomed. Like, from that conversation, that was it. Whatever it was that was stressing you, you were talking to us about your hair, about how you grew it, what you didn't do. And, you know, like, oh, I'm so jealous. Your hair looks so amazing. And that was it. And you just, and I find that we humans sometimes, we're like flowers, aren't we? Mm. If you just, okay, what's happening here? Let's just tend it a bit, you know. I'm not sure what happened. Maybe she doesn't want to share what happened, but maybe if I say, you know, she's looking gorgeous today. She's got a pretty dress, you know, she's always got, you know, and you say that to someone and you see them because they're humans, they just bloom.
So you see, you have that thing. So, which is probably why you come across as very cool. So I'm sticking by my original impression, which is that you are cool. You've just kind of found a way.
I'll take my glasses and put it on.
You've just kind of found a way to, again, I guess, because I don't know a lot of people who especially people who have studied as hard as you have, you know, in the medical field. And I don't know a lot of people who take the time to take their eyes off the books and look at people. I mean, really, really, and I'm talking of people in your profession. You know, many times their heads are so, you know, into their books, they don't take the time to actually look and study people. You have taken that time. So somehow you found a way, which is probably what has led to the business you run. So I think this is a very nice way to segue to that, you know, to find out. Okay, so, I mean, obviously, you've already mentioned your fascination with human beings, which is probably why you were observant enough with your clients and your patients to know that there were certain, there were people who didn't feel confident in their own skin. So I guess my next question is then, what was the fascination? Because I'm sure there are so many things you could have been that you are fascinated with. What was it about the Black skin, or, you know, a skincare range or cosmetics that appealed to you so much that you needed, you went ahead and started a business? Tis the season of Christmas cheer, and I'm briefly interrupting the interview just to let you know that the Girl Unlimited podcast would love to keep sharing the spirit of good tidings all through the Christmas period. That means we won't be taking a break throughout the season. Thankfully, each episode drops every Wednesday, so you can enjoy your Christmas, Boxing Day, and New Year celebrations without having to take time to listen. Unless, of course, you want to, and who would I be to stop you? We good? Okay, good. Back to the interview.
So when I finished my, so you go to medical school, you finish medical school, you do some postgraduate training, then you decide what specialty you want to do. So I decided to be a family physician. And after my family physician training, my trainer, so that's what we call them because you're with someone, my trainer said, there are lots of different things you can do now you've finished medicine. I'm going to show you. So he talked about this. He said hypnosis, blah, blah, blah. Then he talked about Botox and fillers. And, you know, I just loved it. So he made me watch one. He was doing one. So he made me watch one. And I just liked it. I just liked that women would come, you know, some of them feeling sheepish about getting this treatment, and they would have this treatment. You would see the smile on their faces. Some of them were even sneaking away from their husbands, and you could see the boost. And it just felt, even the sneaking away felt like, oh, a secret girl code. You know, I'm doing something for my girls that they really like. There was something about the industry that just really fascinated me, just helping people feel better. And you just chat a different kind of conversation. It's a different conversation from when people are sick, you know, and they feel vulnerable. Sometimes this is, they come from a place of power when they want fillers and they want injectables. So we started doing that. And then people kept asking me about skincare, because of course, no matter how many injectables you have, you need to, it won't help your skin. In those days, they developed stuff now for that. So I decided to train myself about skincare. So I started attending training for skincare. And a few things happened. These people knew jack all about Black skin. They knew nothing. So I was sitting in rooms with people that were saying some funny things, and I thought to myself, but, and I would, and most of the time I'll be the only Black person in the room.
Give me an example of some of the weird things they will say.
So the weirdest one, which every Black person knows, is hydroquinone. So hydroquinone is the commonest skin bleaching ingredient, and it's probably the most powerful. And we know that if you use hydroquinone for a long time, you get this dark bluish tinge on your cheeks, you know, that you can't do anything about. It's permanent. Now, I was just learning about this. This wasn't things they didn't teach you how to use hydroquinone well in medical school. They just told you this is what it does and these are the side effects. So don't use it for a long time. I went to medical school in Nigeria. So I was at one of these sessions with this really important dermatologist. They had flown from abroad to talk about skincare. And I said, oh, you're saying use hydroquinone forever. That was essentially what she was talking about. I said, well, you know, in Black skin, you get this thing called ochronosis and with hydroquinone. She said, yes, I've heard of it. I've seen a couple of people. The treatment is always to use more hydroquinone, maybe go up the strength ladder. And I said, what?
So, and just out of interest, just out of interest. So does hydroquinone work differently on white skin then? Is that what you're saying? On Caucasian skin?
Yes. Oh. They do not get ochronosis. They do not get ochronosis. It works very differently. So I know people that have been on hydroquinone for years. No black person can try it, as you know, as you can see. Get on the streets of Lagos. Mm-hmm. Like every time I get into Lagos, do you know this is 70% of Nigerian women bleach? Do you know that?
I'm not surprised. You were actually the one, if I'm not mistaken, that sent me that link to the film on Netflix called Skins. And I mean, I grew up around, you know, I mean, you grew up in Nigeria as well. So you know this, it's not an adage, but this saying, this concept that fair is beautiful and black is ugly. So I grew up around, interestingly, I had a lot of very light-skinned cousins who would do anything to remain light-skinned, if you know what I mean. So I totally, totally understand what you're saying. Go on, sorry.
So it was like that one, for example. I knew that information, if I grabbed tea of the strength, say, tea, come, let me tell you. I heard this today. This woman said, black women can use hydroquinone for life. You'd be like, oh, I didn't go to medical school. But me, I know that one, you know. And I just realized there's no one, you know, telling us what we, you know, who's looking at it. And there's all kinds of economic, political, psychological aspects to it but no one's talking about us. So I decided to do my own studies. So I started reading for myself and I got encouraged to do the Facebook Lives. So I started doing the Facebook Lives and I was talking about, you know, I would say, oh, this week, let's talk about maybe if you want to lighten your skin, how to do it safely, or if you want to know about sunscreen, or why don't black people use sunscreen? We do need sunscreen, you know? And that's how it started. And while I was doing that, people would message me and say things like, oh, I wish you had your own skincare range. I would buy from you. And then the search began to build my own skincare range. And I had a mentor as well, who I still have, who told me to go build my own skincare range. And that's how the range started.
Okay, that's amazing. Now, I'm hearing, just listening to you talk, I'm hearing a bit of your childhood again, because I remember when you said that you wanted to do something different and something that made you stand out, which was why you were fascinated with aeronautic engineering, because you found a gap, as it were, in that space of in skincare. There weren't a lot of people, if any, well, I guess there are a few now, but there are a lot of people who weren't supplying or weren't catering to the to black skin. And it sounds to me like you found a place, like I said, it's a need in the market and a place that you could also shine, because you had spent time, you know, obviously you've gone to study and everything. And I mean, it's lovely. I always love to see that timeline and look at different things. I've been doing it myself in the last year or so, where I'm like, what bits in my childhood can I see in myself now? Mm-hmm. So it's lovely that you're talking about that. Okay, so I listened to one of your videos and you were talking about skincare being your passion, and just listening to him, because I don't think anyone would spend that much time reading and studying about skincare if it wasn't something that they were really, really passionate about. Unfortunately, not a lot of people, and you probably know, you've met a lot of people who are literally sleepwalking and haven't found their passion, you know, don't know their purpose. They are just living day in, day out, go to work, come back, and, you know, and life just goes on as normal. I don't know. I it's not something it's not something I can accept as a person, because I feel like we're all born with something very special on the inside. That's the whole idea of Girl Unlimited. I'm like, we have unlimited potential that a lot of us, especially women, are not tapping into. So how would you advise such people? And this goes for both men and women, probably even men as well, because they have this thing screwed in their minds that they are go-getters, so a lot of them don't think passion, they just think provision, if they are good men. They're thinking provision. So what would you advise for such people how would they go about finding their own passion?
I'll make a little bit of clarification. Skincare is an avenue to my passion.
Okay.
It's a route to my passion. It's almost, sometimes when I say it's my passion, I've in my head over time, I've realized it's a route to my passion because it's sneaky. It gets women to open up to me. And
I love that.
I love when they tell me stories, especially when they come and say, you know, it's very common that I get messages saying, my mom always told me I was the ugly one because I was the dark one of all my siblings. Like, girl, I go on their Facebook page, steal their photos, put it on the message. This is you. This is you. This is you. I'm going to send it to my friends and get what, oh, please don't send it to their friend. And you're like, and you can say, you're beautiful. You're absolutely stunning. I got on your page and I thought, look at this girl. How does she have perfect eyebrows? How does she, why is her skin so beautiful? You know? And even I spoke to someone recently, and at the end, she was like, no one's ever said this to me. You know, she was almost crying. So that it's almost an avenue to my passion. And what did that girl, lady call me about? She called me about a scar. She had a scar. And I'm like, I've never seen you. I don't know you. I don't know what you look like. Someone's giving you my number, but you're married, you're working, you have children. So I what was the thing that this scar stopped you from achieving in life? She said nothing. I said, but you say when you look at the mirror, you only see the scar. Will you break that mirror and get a different mirror and put some light and tell yourself how gorgeous you are and all the things you've done? I haven't even seen your photo, and you're such an accomplished person. So skincare is like an avenue, is like a sneaky way to get people to tell me their stories so I can hype them up. That I enjoy doing.
So what would you say then is your passion now? So
people, humans, people. And if I
that's
can
amazing.
make you feel better, listen, I'm good. I do stupid things like I've done it last Mother's Day. I sent my a few friends, you know, some of them that thought maybe this was a difficult time for them. So I sent them like a, I did a Snapchat and I said, I don't think I sent it to you because my spirit didn't say to send it to you. I sent it to a few friends. I said something like,
Do you
yo,
want me to
this
take
person.
offense to that you didn't send it to me?
No, don't, because is as the spirit leads. I'm not God, you know. Sometimes I say, oh, this person sounds like she's a bit down. What can I do? I'm going to send her, you know, stupid things like £5 stuff on Amazon, or I'm just going to record a video.
In fairness, I have been a recipient of your kindness in another way. So I know what you're talking about, and I can imagine what, because that was a surprise to me. So if that's what you do for for all your friends, then I'm not surprised that people love you as much as they do.
It's not all my friends. I'm not that great, you know. But you know, on Mother's Day, I sent a video. I was like, "Hey, yo, T, happy Mother's Day! You're amazing. You're doing great," you know. And it just came to me, and I just did it. So skincare is like my avenue to know people. So the greatest thing the business has done for me is got me to meet more people. Okay, now when we talk about passion, what is your passion? I'll tell you another story. So one day, we had a seminar, and we had this person come into my class group, my university class group, to teach us about business. So my university class group, think about it, they're all doctors. Some want to start businesses. So this person's coming to teach us about businesses. And in the middle of this, there were lots of conversations about a particular person said, I think I want to do business, but I don't know what my passion is. I don't know what I need to do business about. I said, let me tell you what your passion is. And she was my neighbor in university. So I lived next door to her for 3 years. I said, your passion, the thing you're good at that comes easily to you, it's tidying up. She kissed the teeth and was like, what? That's nothing. I said, because you haven't heard of Marie Kondo. Because you have not heard of Marie Kondo. Who speaks no English, by the way? Marie Kondo doesn't speak English, but she has written an English book, has featured in Netflix. You know, so when people say they don't have passion, so I remember when you asked me this question, one of the things I remember was being at a sermon, a church sermon, maybe like 3rd year in university, and this pastor was preaching, and he said, "How do you know your passion? How do you know what you're wired for?" And he said three things. He said, "Ask yourself things that rile you or things that get you excited. Ask your friends, things that you do really well, or ask yourself also things that you do really well, then ask your family things that you do really well. So I asked my mom then, what do I do really well? My mom said, you read books really well. You're a very good reader of book. When you were a baby, sometimes I wake up at night, I'll see you reading by the light from the window.
Oh, wow.
I said, Mom, that one cannot make anybody money. That is another mistake, you know. Sometimes we think our passion is tied to money. Our passion is never tied to money. You might make money from me, all good and well, but it's never tied to money. It's always about helping people. That's what our passion is. What riles you up? You get into a room and it's messy and you want to tidy it up, and you tidy up for your friends, you would do it for free. That is your passion. You go to someone's house and they're hungry. Just, do you have noodles and pepper? Let me just mix it up for you. That is your thing. You know, we are looking for this, you know, eureka moment where some angels flap and come and say, behold, Lord, this is your passion. No, it's there already. It's just, you don't want to accept that, see, because it's a nothing to you.
Yeah, because it comes natural to you, isn't it?
You don't want to accept it. But I would, if I, my friend would come and live in my house, I'll be the happiest human. You just tidy up every day. I'll pay you good money, you know. It comes naturally to you, but it's hard for others. So to you, you belittle it. You belittle it, or you think, oh, it's not about money. Who cares? It's not about that. You can make money from anything. You can go work for someone and still be in your passion and still be in your ministry, still doing the thing you need to do.
It's what you said is really funny, because we, not funny, but it's interesting, because we're having, I had this, my last interview, one of the things we actually mentioned, we talked about, was this, everyone waiting for this eureka moment. So it's interesting that you actually said the exact same thing. So it's like waiting for this thing to hit you on the side of the head to say that this is what you were called to do. And when you don't hear that, you feel that it does not exist. But that's like you rightly said, it's something that, you know, riles you up, something that upsets you, something that excites you. And sometimes I actually know of people whose gifting is finding ways to take that passion or that thing that you're passionate about and teach you how to actually make money from it, if that is what you want to do, or find a way to, or find an aspect of it. As a story, a just quick story that I heard, this is another podcast that I listen to from time to time, and she talked about this what do you call those people that make pottery, what do you call them?
Potters,
you know. So he's a potter, and he loves to make this really intricate designs and everything. And one day, just out of, I don't know, I think he was doing it for a friend or something, he just made this really weird looking pot, you know, which, and before this time he was a hungry artist, as we know. And but the story is, you know, he made this offhanded once in a just off the cuff, made this pot, and he gave it to this friend of his, and somebody else saw this pot and they liked it, and they were like, can he make more of those pots? And he's like, but I, that's not what I make. I'm an artist. My craft is very, very intricate. And I'm like, no, this is the one we want. And before he knew it, that is how he eventually became not just a household name, but became very, very comfortable, very financially comfortable, independent from that one cup that he didn't think was anything worth considering. So sometimes there are ways maybe that you could monetize, but it's maybe not the way you think it's meant to be monetized.
Yes.
So the difference is you have gone ahead and you found a way to liaise with people through their skin, teaching them how to be confident in their skin. And so you found a way to, you know, operate in your passion and make money from it. So I would like to know how, you know, so how's business been? You know, I heard you started, I saw you started in 2018. How's it been so far, 3 years on, or almost 3 years on?
So business is, funny enough, does not come naturally to me. Business doesn't come naturally to me. And two, business, if there was a little bit that was naturally in you, medical school beats it out. Because the whole point of medical school is to be nondescript, hidden, They will find you. They always find you. People will always need you for stuff. In fact, I remember in medical school, we had a lecture about how big your board. If you set up private practice, you can't have a big board. You can't advertise on TV. You can't do this. So many rules about how you cannot market yourself. And that stays in you. And the profession takes it in and also looks down heavily on you if you go outside the box. So medical students are beaten into a box. We live in a box, you know, and they put us on the treadmill and you go down, you know, that path, you know. So being a business person doesn't come naturally to me. Meeting people, talking to them comes naturally to me. Marketing, oh God, do I have to do this video? Do I have to sell to this person? And they're like, oh, you need to contact people and tell, oh, I don't want to do it. So I don't do it. So business can be, so that bit is, this is me telling you the truth about, you know, for some people, it comes naturally.
We want the truth.
For some people, the marketing comes naturally. For me, it doesn't come naturally. Meeting people comes naturally. So business has been, he's been really good to me because I've met my goals of, or I am meeting my goals of why I do business. But the thing I'm going to work hard on is the marketing. And in fact, funny enough, I just employed a young girl this month. She started on the 1st of this month, who's going to help me with, you know, that kind of bit that I'm not good at. So I've struggled with it for a while. So now I need help. So I've got this young lady. She's in the background. She's looking great already. So I'm excited. So that's the next
step.
That's
amazing. That is amazing. I say that because I wouldn't, if you had told me it didn't come naturally to you, I would have said, you know, it's you are lying, that this that's not the way it comes across. But I'm glad that you've noticed that is something that you struggle with, that you've identified the areas that you're struggling with, which we all do, because there are certain areas that borrowing the phrase from The Big Leap by Gay Henderson, there are areas that we operate, which he calls our zone of genius. And the aim or our goal should always be to operate from that place and then outsource the other areas that we do not, that don't come naturally to us, that we struggle with, and just get that bit, you know, get it outsourced, delegated, systemized, you know, automated, whatever you need to do with those ones, operate in your zone of genius, because that's where your strength lies. That's where your energy lies. So I'm glad that you found that out and you are actively taking that into consideration. So that's amazing. Okay, so that was one of the fascinations I had with you. It was the fact that you are a medical doctor and you run a business on the side. And I didn't know a lot of doctors personally who did them. And it sounded to me like it were concurrent, like you were doing them side by side. I wouldn't even call it a side business like some people would do. I saw it them like two things that were very important to you, because I'd listened to some of your Facebook lives and I saw it was something that you were passionate about, speaking to people about it and everything. And I was like, how is she? So you've just explained really how how it's not usually, it usually doesn't go hand in hand. But I would think that you're a natural. Just the fact that you're able to, you love to speak to people and you love to talk to people. And that to me is already the hardest part of marketing done.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Anyway, so we'll move on. I mean, we just have a couple of questions left. I know I've taken a lot of your time, but I've enjoyed our chat. I was going to say that, okay, so you are doing something you love. You are, you know, in the mix of, you know, your purpose, I would say, which, you know, you are bringing a smile to the faces of women. You are helping them get confident in their own skin. You know, so what sort of advice would you give to other people who are listening to us right now? And they're like, you know, I've wanted to do that one. And they've heard you say, oh, that's organizing gift that I have. I could actually put that into use. I can actually do something with that. What would you advise them are the steps, maybe the first initial steps they need to take?
Start. Is like, that's all we have to say. And then we move on to the next question. You have to start. Some people want to work things out. I'm like, I want to see 10 steps ahead. But that's one thing business has taught me. You cannot, it's impossible. You can start. And in fact, I had this vision at one time of what business was like. And business is like a stairs, a ladder to heaven, you know, like a Jacob's ladder or something. And you don't see what the next step is until you've done the first step. So a little cloud then lifts and then you see the next step. Then a little cloud lifts and then you see the next step. Some steps are 2 days. Some steps are 8 months. Some steps cause you anxiety. Some cause you joy. Mm-hmm. But once you've done that, then the next step will open up. So start. And we're so blessed in this generation. We're so lucky. Like, you don't need anything to start. You don't even need money. Shall I tell you a secret? When I wanted to start the skincare line, I didn't have money. So I contacted 20 of my friends, or 10, oh, wow. I can't remember, wow. Then. Yes. Or so the manufacturer said, you need this minimum order, right? So that minimum order that I needed to start, I contacted a few friends. I wrote a list and I contacted them. And I said, oh, I'm so excited. I'm starting my skincare range. Oh, you've always been supportive. You've always been kind. I want you to be the first set of people to launch this. It's going to be so amount. For you, it's a discount, blah, 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 blah.
And you said you don't know anything about marketing.
Because someone taught me to do it. Didn't teach me to do that. I can't remember anyway, but this is what I did. So I had no money for that order. And I got these people to pay for a pre-order. You know, so I thought everyone did. Not everyone did. And some of those people some of them never came back to buy products, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because some of them have become my greatest advocates because they tried it first and they told everyone else about it. So I got that money. That money they paid me was what I used to pay for my first batch of products.
You found a way.
I found a way. And then someone else gave me some money because they wanted to invest in the business. You know, wow. So I ended up not even needing the investment in the business. The investment in the business was fear that got me there. Oh, where am I going to get there? Oh, I remember speaking to my 10-year-old son about it. Oh, what do you think? Where can I get money for business? Should I take a credit card? Should I do this? He said, no, don't take a credit card. Why didn't he? You know, and that was even feared. People paid before I paid for the order and I got it, you know. So start. We're so lucky. We've got social media. If you do a TikTok video, if you do it right, 100 people, 200 people, 1,000 people, it goes viral. If you have Instagram, you don't need TV. You don't need to pay one penny. People have approached me and said, oh, if you pay £20 to be on my show or £100, this is it. And I'm like, I don't need to. I can just do my Facebook Live. What are you going to give me, you know? You don't even need to pay anything. You can grow your business to a really good point. In this day and age that we're in, we're so blessed that you can do anything that you want. The resources are available, and many of them are available for free. So start. Use social media marketing. Speak to your friends. Not all your friends will support you. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean you leave that angry that, oh, this person, Jane, did not support me. So that means all my friends. It's okay. The ones that support you, stick there, you know. So just start. Just start and grow from there. And there are loads of books and podcasts available now. If you don't even like to read, you can listen all the time, you know. YouTube is one of my major sources of getting information. I just go on YouTube and listen and learn. Everything is available for free on YouTube.
Yeah, I was just about to say, and YouTube is free. So apart from the inconvenience of 5 to 10 seconds of an ad.
Yeah. In fact, you know, first of all, maybe if you're in Nigeria or you're in places where data is expensive, so paying for that data might be, you know, a thing. But otherwise, how much would you pay for that knowledge? Even going to university is not cheap, you know. And you say an ad. Funny enough, I just recently paid for YouTube Premium.
Did you?
did. I was so against it for so long. And then this last week, I thought to myself, I use this thing so much that I would love to not have the inconvenience of the ads. For example, when I'm on my, I exercise every day. When I'm on my bike, I like to listen to the music on YouTube, and I don't want to reach and skip the ads because of that. So I thought to myself, well, yeah, I listen to YouTube every day. There are books on YouTube, and I paid for YouTube Premium this week. I felt it was that valuable to me that I would pay for it. So the info, and you don't have to pay for it. Like literally, I've used it for decades and not paid for it. So you don't have to pay for it. But I found it so valuable that I paid for it this week. So the information's out there. We're really, really blessed to live in this generation.
I totally agree with you. I think we are, you know, we're, and I can't even imagine what it's going to be like for our kids if this is what it's like for us at this time. But you're absolutely right. The threshold to entry is not as, you know, huge as it used to be. You don't have to, you know, take out a commercial on TV that used to cost thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds or dollars, depending on where you are, or naira, depending on where you are. You know, you don't have to spend that much money, if any, at all on anything. I absolutely agree with you. I think what holds a lot of people back, unfortunately, is fear.
It's fear. It's fear. And the fear is, will I fail at it? You're failing now because you haven't started. So, in fact, you're starting from a place of failure. So that one's all right. Yeah, failed already. So that one is not even an issue. So because you haven't started, then the second one is, what will people think of me? They're thinking already. They're thinking. They don't even like you. So what are you talking about? You know, and I'm not good at it. Hello, YouTube. Hello, podcast. Hello, books. No one became an expert. I never became a doctor on the first day in lecture. I became a doctor after 6 to 7 years of training. And even then, I was a useless doctor. You know, I still needed to go out there and see patients and practice and practice. And there are still aspects of medicine that if I need to know now, don't make me deliver your baby. It's high risk. You know, if I need to learn to deliver babies, I have to go back and say to them, I'm new, and then they train me up. So we always, there's always that learning curve, but the learning should be exciting to you, because what is life, you know, if it's not about learning and growing?
I know our listeners will really, really love all the nuggets that you have dropped. And I'm just wondering now, looking back to the young Yinka that was torn away from Mama Yinka's bosom and transported to this unhappy existence, what would you tell her now?
I would say joy comes in the morning. Just hang in there. Joy comes. Joy will come. Just hold on. Hold on. It gets better.
Love it. Love it. Okay. So where can we find you now that, you know, you have told us everything that you're doing, and I'm sure people have questions. I know we haven't delved deep into, you know, the intricacies of, you know, what you do and what you teach in terms of, you know, you teach a lot about skin and everything. Okay. Maybe what we could do, just give people a foretaste. Yeah, before we move on to telling them where they can find you, just give them a foretaste. So if I was asked to ask you a basic question, like, what is the best way to take care of our skin?
If you didn't hear anything from this podcast and you just wanted to summarize into one sentence, use a sunscreen every day. That's the one thing that your skin will thank you for all through your life, especially if you've got skin of color, because we're not told that we need sunscreen. We moisturize, we exfoliate, because we scrub, we're clean, you know. So, but we never talk about sunscreen. And that's been like my loudest message. Use a sunscreen every day. If it's an SPF 30 and above, even better. If it's broad spectrum, even better. So essentially, that's what I do. I teach about skincare, especially in the skin of color, for Black skin. No one's really out there talking about our skincare from a scientific point of view. That's what I want to be. I want to be that voice that says, this is what the science is about how to look after our skin.
Wow. Okay. So what is broad? Did you say broad spectrum? Did I get that correct? Because you said SPF.
Broad, like a wide spectrum. So because there are different kinds of ultraviolet rays, right? Different kind of rays we get from the sun. There's UVA, there's UVB, there's infrared, all kinds of things. So broad spectrum at least covers the UVA and UVB. So you get like a kind of wider coverage with a broad spectrum. So when you're looking at the label, so one of the things I talk about a lot in my educational sessions is about reading labels and going there and saying, not like someone says, oh, this will make you this. Like, what's in there? What makes that happen? What's that ingredient in there? So what does a glycolic acid mean? What does a salicylic acid mean? What is niacin? What kind of sunscreen? So that's what I'm talking about. So I talk about the different kind of what's an SPF 30, what's an SPF 50, what do they mean? What do they do? So that's why I'm summarizing it. If you go out to shop for your skincare, and you needed to buy only one thing, buy a sunscreen that is a broad spectrum and that is at least a 30.
Okay, that's amazing. I was hoping you were going to say that actually, because I think I've heard you say that in a couple of podcasts. And it was actually after hearing you, I started using this, because I was the same with most people or women of color. I didn't think we needed sunscreen. In fact, there are times I still have arguments with people, but I was like, Dr. Yinka said. It's now because I was like, no, a medical doctor, actually a skin specialist, I like to call you, to people that, you know, who don't know you, is she says that you should use skin sun protection. So I started using, I'll be honest and say, I'm not as, you know, because I've heard you say use it every single day. And I'm like, oh my God.
That's something, because people use something on their skin every day, right? They tend to use something, especially on their face, even if they don't use anywhere else. So my advice is just use a sunscreen as that thing. So if you're going to put one product, let it be the sunscreen, right? Everything else is an extra. If you're going to use one thing, let it be sunscreen. And I know that for the skin of color, our problem, our big problem is that it leaves a whitish tan or gray tan, or just doesn't hydrate, just doesn't feel right. You don't feel like this thing is doing the job that it should do, which essentially is what I went out to make. So that's what the DYS does. So it's the sunscreen, is the cheapest of the range. And it's cheap, it's the cheapest for a reason. It's not because it's the cheapest to make, it's because it's the one I want everyone to be able to afford. So when people message me like, which of your products should I buy? The sunscreen. Buy, you know, next. So, and that's why it's cheap, not because, you know, that I just want everyone to be able to buy it and use it every day. And the DIY sunscreen is hydrating as well. So you can use it as literally the only thing and you go, and you feel moisturized. You don't feel like it's drying or it's greasy. So people that have dry skin, people that have oily skin, find it works really well for them.
So as an everyday facial cream, so in place of moisturizer.
So I had a big talk once, maybe I need to do it again, about why you may not need moisturizer, right? So I naturally have dry skin, and all my life have used moisturizers, like I'm into moisturizers. My skin's so dry that I can flake it off. Like I used to remember studying for exams, and my thing to do would be flaking off the dry skin on my forehead and just watching it flake on my book. I used to buy shea butter. There was a point I was buying shea butter straight from Africa because, you know, the original, no organics. I would lather this stuff on my face and I still had dry skin. And actually a change came when I started using vitamin C, which is a story I tell lots of times. And I decided not to use a moisturizer for a while just to see if the vitamin C serum worked. And believe me, I haven't gone back to moisturizer since, and I still have dry skin. I would still consider myself as having dry skin. But using the sunscreen every day is more than enough to hydrate my skin.
Interesting. Now we know. So what's next for you? So I'm curious. I didn't actually plan to ask this, but I'm like, okay, so with all that's going on now in your life, and so what should we expect next?
What I would really love to do is introduce more skin care products into the range. So I started out with the basics, four products, the sunscreen that we've talked about, a wash to cleanse your skin, a vitamin C serum that I absolutely believe in and love, and retinol, which is the most powerful anti-aging product. So those are the basics, that if you wanted to start from somewhere, that's where to start. But I'd like to add other things as well that I know works, maybe hyaluronic acid, maybe they're not as effective as glycolic acid, for example, but they do have their place. Niacin in other products that I know are great for the skin, I'd like to add that. Also, I want to add tools. So there's some tools that are really good for the skin. So that's where I'm going to next. So just add more range. I keep trialing out new products. So at the moment, I'm trialing out two new products. One has just failed, so I have to go back to the lab and reassess how we can make that work. And the other one's doing really well. So I've got people trying it out, and one of them called me yesterday. And she said, "When is this thing hitting the market? When is it hitting the market?" I was like,
Wow.
"Oh, wait, so that's my next move, just to have more products. What I would love, right? A dream in my head. This is the first time I'm saying it out loud, is I wish
You heard it
I
for the
wish I
first time on Girl Unlimited, guys.
yes, my unlimited, my big, hairy, audacious goal. I would love to own a factory, right? To make these products myself, because I still feel like I would love to make it cheaper so that more people can buy. So I'm completely limited by, someone else making the products, me saying this is what I want in it and all of that. So I would love to be able to make it myself so that I can offer that value, that financial value back to my clients and customers and the people that want this product. So that's my dream.
Oh wow. No, I'm in love with that dream, and I say it makes me excited, and the reason is because I know it is so achievable because I've heard of people who have done it. So it is not as I can assure you, it's not as big and audacious as you think. It is actually not that far off. So I'm excited because that
Yes.
then means we might be hearing another story in the next couple of years.
I've never said it out loud, but it's somewhere at the back of my mind, like, gosh, I wish this would happen, So maybe I should write it down, make the vision plain.
Absolutely, absolutely. And just do the research because, like I said, I have heard a couple of people, some people who I know started out doing Amazon FBA and stuff, and then they started their own. And interestingly, they are within the same industry. So I think, I don't know if theirs is makeup or but something close to that same. So exactly what you just said, they wanted to make it cheaper and decided to start their own factory. It's actually, if I find it, I will let you know. Anyway, that's going like that one we will talk about later. But yeah, that's really, really exciting, guys. And I mean, if you're a woman of color and you have any questions and or you want to find out more, Yinka, where can they find you?
So I am on Facebook as Dr. Yinka, so Dr. and Yinka. So the page is called Dr. Yinka Skin, but Facebook's at me at Dr. Yinka. I'm on Instagram as Dr. Yinka Skin. So Dr. There's a dot, then Yinka. And I'm on all the channels. I'm on Twitter, I'm on TikTok, all of them as Dr. Yinka Skin. But I think my most active social media platforms are Instagram and Facebook.
Amazing. There was one more thing I wanted to mention, which we haven't talked about at all. And I just wanted to make mention of it. You are starting a podcast, aren't you?
Yes. Yes. I almost forgot. So I am starting a podcast. In fact, just I'm speaking to you now. I was up till late last night doing some work on it. So we've had about 11 guests so far, and it's going really well. Listen, oh, Black women have such amazing stories. Such wise, beautiful, giving humans. So our podcast is called Females in Time, and it's with a friend of mine, a dear friend of mine called Amy. We are going to launch in the next few weeks. We're in the final stages of editing and then uploading to the popular platform. So yes, so look out for that.
Guys, it's Female in Time. So do look out for that. I'm sure if you do follow Dr. Yinka Skin, I'm sure she's going to make sure you know when the podcast comes out. So please definitely follow her on all the social media platforms or check her out and see what she's doing. She's doing amazing things. I'm really proud of you. I'm so happy to have had you here and just had you share, like I said earlier, your wisdom with our audience. It's been amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're such a great interviewer. I really enjoyed my time with you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Good job you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. You, my friend, are a total rock legend for listening to this episode to the end. I hope you found value in it. And if you did, would you do me a quick favor? Would you rate and review this podcast on the platform you're listening? And if the platform you're listening doesn't have the facility to rate and review, then please share the episode with your friends and your loved ones. It will go such a long way in helping spread the word of this podcast. And until next time, remember, you're a unique, remarkably created person with a God-given purpose and unlimited potential. The question is, what are you going to do about it?
You think that nothing will become of me, that I'll never come to anything, but I rise. Yes, you might have given up on me, 'cause you couldn't see what I see when I